And of course, Major Waldron's was no exception to the rule. His niggers not only had holiday, but a barbecue, and it was a day of general mirth and festivity. On this particular 4th, the barbecue was to be on the banks of the creek, formed by the backwaters of the river, and was to be a fish fry as well as a barbecue. All hands on the plantation were up by daylight and preparing for the frolic. Some of the Negro men, indeed, had been down to the creek all night, setting out their fish baskets and getting the pit ready for the meat. The pit was a large hole in which a fire was kindled to roast the animals, which were suspended over it, and they must commence the barbecuing very early in the morning in order to get everything ready for dinner time. The children were as much excited over it as the niggers were, and Mammy could hardly keep them still enough to dress them. They were so eager to be off. Major and Mrs. Waldron were to go in the light carriage, but the little folks were to go with Mammy and Aunt Millie in the spring wagon, along with the baskets of provisions for the white folks' tables. The bread and vegetables and cakes and pastry for the niggers' tables had been sent off in a large wagon, and were at the place for the barbecue long before the white families started from home. The niggers, too, had all gone. Those who were not able to walk had gone in wagons, but most of them had walked, for it was only about 3 miles from the house. Despite all their efforts to hurry up Mammy, it was nearly 9 o'clock before the children could get her off, and even then she didn't want to let Cherubim and Seraphim go, and Uncle Snakebit Bob, who was driving the wagon, had to add his entreaties to those of the little folks before she would consent at all. After that matter had been decided, and the baskets all packed in, and the children all comfortably seated, and Dilsey and Chris and Ra squeezed into the back of the wagon between the ice cream freezer and the lemonade buckets, and Cherubim and Seraphim in the children's laps, and Mammy and Aunt Millie on 2 split-bottom chairs just back of the driver's seat, and Uncle Snakebit Bob with the reins in his hands, just ready to drive off. Whom should they see but old Daddy Jake coming down the avenue, waving his hat for them to wait for him. "Daw now," said Mammy, "the folks done gone and left old Daddy, and we got to stuff him in here somewhere." "There ain't a woman here," said Dumps, tightening her grip on Cherubim, for she strongly suspected Mammy would insist on leaving the puppies to make room for Daddy. "Well, he ain't got to be left," said Mammy. "I was always along to speck old folks myself, and if this wagon goes, why then Daddy Jake got to go with it." And Major and Miss Waldron having gone, Mammy was the next highest in command, and from her decision there was no appeal. How come you to be get left, Daddy?" asked Uncle Snakebit Bob as the old man came hobbling up on his stick. "Well, you see, child, I was a lighting of my pipe and a fixing of a new stem in it, and never noticed when the wagons went off. You see, I'm a-getting a little deep in these old years of mine. They've been a-fastened on this old nigger's head a long time, upwards of 100 years or more, and the time has been when they could hear leaves fall of the nights. But they're getting out of fix somehow. They ain't worried like they ought to. And they just stop up there and let the wagons drive off or leave the old nigger a lighting of his pipe. And when I got through and went to the door, then I hear the mighty stillness in the quarters. And bless your heart, the folks was gone. And I looked up this way and I see the wagon here and the allowed you to all give me a lift some way. Them little niggers will have to stay at home," said Mammy sharply, eyeing the little darkies. "Or else they'll have to walk, case Daddy got to come in this wagon. And you get out, you little niggers." At this, Dilsey and Chris and Rob began to unpack themselves, crying bitterly the while, because they were afraid to walk by themselves, and they knew they couldn't walk fast enough to keep up with the wagon. But here Diddy came to the rescue and persuaded Uncle Bob to go to the stable and saddle Corbin, the pony. And all three of the little niggers mounted him and rode on behind the wagon, while Daddy Jake was comfortably fixed in the space they had occupied, and now they were fairly off. "Mammy, what does folks have 4th of July's for?" asked Dumps after a little while. "I don't know, honey," answered Mammy. "I hear them say it was long of some fighting another what the white folks fit one time. But whether that was the time what Bert David fit the lyre or not, I don't know. I hear them say about that. It might have been that time, and then again, it might have been the time where Bert Sampson killed up the folks with the jawbone. I ain't right sure what time it was, but then I knows hit was some fighting or another. Hit was the Declaration of Independence that did it. It's in the little history, and it wasn't any fighting, it was a writing. And there's a picture of it in the book, and all the men sitting around, and one of them is writing. Yes, that's what I hear, said Uncle Bob. I hear them say that they had the first defamation of independence on the 4th of July, and ever since then, the folks been having holiday and barbecues on that day. What's a defamation, Uncle Bob? Asked Dumps, who possessed an inquiry mind. Well, the most forgets the exact meaning, said the old man, scratching his head. It's some kind of writing, though, just like Miss Diddy say. But let alone that, it's in the squishinary, and your ma can find it for you and explain the exact meaning of the word. But the defamation of independence, it happened on the 4th of July, and it happens every 4th of July since then, and that's according to my understanding of it, said Uncle Bob, whipping up his horses. What's that, Bob? Asked of Daddy Jake, and as soon as Uncle Bob had yelled at him, Dumps and query, and his answer to it, the old man said, you're wrong, Bob. I remember as well the 4th of July. Hit was a man, honey. Ma's 4th of July was a man, and the day was named at him. He was a powerful fighting man. But then, who it was he fit, I most forgot. It's been so long ago. But I remembers, though, I was a right smart slip of a boy, and I went with my old master, your pa's grandpa, to a big dinner what they had on the James River in old Virginia. And that day, so my 4th of July was dark, and he made a big speech to the white folks, case I hear them clapping of the hands. I never seen him, but I heard he was there, though, and I knowed he was there, because I surely heard him clapping of the hands. And according to the way I remember about it, this is his birthday, what the folks keeps plum to yet, because there ain't no man nowadays like Mars 4th of July. He was a great man, and he had sense, too. And then, besides that, he was some of the first families in them days. Why, his folks used to visit our white folks. I held his horse for him many a time, and let alone that, I knowed some of his niggers. But then, that's been a long time ago. But what about the writing, Daddy? Asked Diddy, who remembered the picture too well to give up the writing part. He was just a signing some kind of deeds or something, said Daddy. I don't know what he was writing about, but since he was a man, case he lived in my remembrance, and I done seen him myself. That settled the whole matter, though Diddy was not entirely satisfied. But as the wagon drove up to the creek bank just then, she was too much interested in the barbecue to care much for Mars 4th of July. The children all had their fishing lines and hooks, and as soon as they were on the ground, started to find a good place to fish. Dilsey got some bait from the nigger boys and baited the hooks, and it was a comical sight to see all the children, white and black, perched upon roots of trees, or seated flat on the ground, watching intently their hooks, which they kept bobbing up and down so fast that the fish must have been very quick indeed to catch them. They soon wearied of such dull sport and began to set their wits to work to know what to do next. Let's go possum hunting, suggested Dilsey. Ain't no possums in the daytime, said Diddy. Yes, there is, Miss Diddy. There's lots of them. Folks just goes at night for the save time. I knows how to hunt for possums. I can treat them just same as a dog. And the children, delighted at the novelty of the thing, all started off possum hunting. But Mammy was helping unpack the dinner baskets and was not watching them just then. They wandered off some distance, climbing over logs and falling into mud puddles, where they all had their heads thrown back and their faces turned up to the trees, looking for the possums, and thereby missed seeing the impediments in the way. At length, Dilsey called out, yeah, the possum. And they all came to a dead halt under a large oak tree, which Dilsey and Chris, and even Diddy and Dumps, I regret to say, prepared to climb. But the climbing consisted mostly in active and fruitless endeavors to make a start. But Dilsey was the only one of the party who got so much as 3 feet from the ground. But she did actually climb up until she reached the first limb, and then crawled along until she got near enough to shake off the possum, which proved to be a big chunk of wood that had lodged up there from a falling branch, probably. And when Dilsey shook the limb, it fell down right upon Rao's upturned face and made a nosebleed. What you doing, you nigger, you? Demanded Ra angrily as she wiped the blood from her face. I dare you to come down out in that tree and I'll beat the life out of you. I'll warn you who'd be shaking chunks on. In vain did Dilsey apologize and say she thought it was a possum. Ra would listen to no excuse, and as soon as Dilsey reached the ground, they had a rough and tumble fight in which both parties got considerably worsted in the way of losing valuable hair and of having their eyes filled with dirt and the clean dresses all muddied. But Tot was so much afraid of Raya, her little nurse and maid, would get hurt that she screamed and cried and refused to be comforted until the combatants were suspended active hostilities, though they kept up quarreling for some time, even after they had recommenced their search for possums. Dilsey don't know how to treat no possums, said Raya contemptuously, after they'd walked for some time and anxiously looked up at every tree they passed. Yes, a kid retorted Dilsey. I can see him just the same as a dog, having to send possums for the tree. But I can't make possums, though. And if there ain't no possums, then I can't tree them, that's all. Maybe they don't come out on the 4th of July, said Dumps. Maybe possums keep the same as people. Now, maybe they does, said Dilsey, who was glad to have some excuse for her profitless possum hunting. And the children, being fairly tired out, started back to the creek bank when they came upon Uncle Snakebit Bob wandering through the woods and looking intently on the ground. What are you looking for, Uncle Bob? Asked Diddy. Just a few buckeyes, honey, answered the woman. Well, I don't want to die no drunkard myself, said Uncle Bob, whose besetting sin was love of whiskey. Just buckeyes keep folks from dying drunkards, asked Dumps. That's what they says, and I loves I'd lay me in a few. Case I've always hearn that them folks were totes of buckeye in the left breeches pocket, and then another in the right-hand coat pocket, that they ain't going to die no drunkards. But if they would stop drinking whiskey, they wouldn't die drunkards anyhow, would they, Uncle Bob? Well, I don't know, honey. You're pinning the old nigger mighty close. The whiskey might have something to do with it. I ain't disputing that. But what I stands on is this. Them folks what I see die drunk, they never had no buckeyes in the pockets. Because I remember that overseer what Moss Brunson had. He died with delirium tremens, and he runned, he did, for to get away from the things what he seed at him. And he jumped into the river, and he got drowned. And I was there when they pulled him out. And I says to John Small, who was a standing there, says I, now I'll lay you, he ain't got no buckeyes in his pockets. And with that, me and John, we took him, turned his pockets wrong side out as. And bless your soul, child, it was just like I say, there weren't no buckeyes there. Well, I believed in the old saying before, but that just kind of solemn me, or fastened ever, and I don't care what the weather is nor what the hurry is. It may rain and it may shine, and the time may be oppressing, but old Bob, he don't stir in his house mornings, except he's got buckeyes in his pockets. But I see them getting ready for dinner as I come along, and you children better be getting towards the table. That was enough for the little folks, and they hurried back to the creek. The table was formed by driving posts into the ground and laying planks across them, and had been fixed up the day before by some of the men. The dinner was excellent, barbecued mutton and shote and lamb and squirrels and very fine gumbo, and plenty of vegetables and watermelons and fruits, and fresh fish which the niggers had caught in the sand, for none of the anglers had been successful. Everybody was hungry, for they'd had very early breakfast, and besides, it had been a fatiguing day, for most of the niggers had walked the 3 miles, and then had danced and played games nearly all morning, and so they were ready for dinner. And everybody seemed very happy and gay, except Mammy. She had been so upset at the children's torn dresses and dirty faces that she could not regain her good humor all at once. And then, too, Dumps had lost her sunbonnet, and there were some unmistakable freckles across her little nose. And so Mammy looked very cross and grumbled a good deal, though her appetite seemed good, and she did full justice to the barbecue. Now, Mammy had some peculiar ideas of her own as to the right and proper way for ladies to conduct themselves, and one of her theories was that no white lady should ever eat heartily in company. She might eat between meals if desired, or even go back after the meal was over and satisfy appetite. But to sit down with a party of ladies and gentlemen and make a good square meal, Mammy considered very ungenteel indeed. This idea she was always trying to impress upon the little girls so as to render them as ladylike as possible in the years to come. And on this occasion, as there were quite a number of the families from the adjacent plantations present, she was horrified to see Dumps eating as heartily and with as evident satisfaction as if she'd been alone in the nursery at home. Diddy, too, would take her second piece of barbecued squirrel and seemed to be enjoying it very much when a shake of Mammy's head reminded her of the impropriety of such proceeding. So she laid aside the squirrel and minced delicately over some less substantial food. The frowns and nods, however, were thrown away upon Dumps. She ate of everything she wanted until she was fully satisfied, and I grieve to say that her papa encouraged her in such unladylike behavior by helping her liberally to whatever she asked for. But after the dinner was over, and after the doggies had played and danced until quite late, and after the ladies and gentlemen had had several very interesting games at euchre and whist, and after the little folks had wandered about as much as they pleased, swinging on grapevines and riding on saplings and playing bass and stealing goods and tiring themselves out generally, and after they had been all duly stowed away in the spring wagon and started for home, and Mammy began at Dumps about her unpardonable appetite. "But I was hungry, Mammy," apologized the little girl. "I don't care if you was," replied Mammy. "That ain't no reason for forgetting your manners and stuffing yourself right before all the gemmons. Miss Diddy Doll, she behaved like a little lady, just kind of fooling with a knife and fork and never eating nothing hardly. And Doll, you was just a piling in shoats and lambs and squirrels and roasting ears and pickles and puddings and cakes and watermelons till I was that shame for to call your master's daughter." And poor old Dumps, now that the enormity of her sin was brought home to her, and the articles eaten so carefully enumerated, began to feel very much like a boa constrictor, and the tears fell from her eyes as Mammy continued, "I done nussed a heap of chillin' in my time, but I ain't never seen no white child eat for the gentlemen's like you does. It appears like I can never learn you no manners nohow." "Let the child alone, Sis Rachel," interposed Uncle Bob. "She ain't no grown lady, and I seed Master helping of her plate hisself. She never eat none too much, considering it was the 4th of July." "Didn't I eat no shoats and lambs, Uncle Bob?" asked Dumps, wiping her eyes. "I don't believe you did," said Uncle Bob. "I seed you a squirrel or two, and a few fish likely. And then, with a sprinkling of roasting ears and cakes, was the most what I see, G." "And that was too much," said Mammy, "right before the gentlemen's." But Dumps was comforted at Uncle Bob's moderate statement of the case, and so Mammy's lecture lost much of its intended severity. As they were driving through the grove before reaching the house, it was quite dark, and they heard an owl hooting in one of the trees. "I see you keeping on saying your sass," said Daddy Jake, addressing the owl. "If not a done happened to all you is boutin' it, I'd let it alone myself." "What's he saying?" asked Diddy. "Why don't you hear him, honey, saying, 'Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you? If you cook for my folks, then I'll cook for you all.'" Well, it was long at that very tune when he'd lose his eyes and can't see no more in the daytime. "And if I was him, I'd let folks cookin' alone." "Can't you tell us about it, Daddy?" asked Dumps. "I ain't got no time now," said the old man, "'cause here's the wagon almost at the door. And let alone that, I ain't never heard 'twas good luck for to be telling no tales on the 4th of July. And if you can come to my cabin some evening when you're a airing of yourselves, then I'll tell you just what I hear about now, and structure in many a thing what you don't know now." And now the wagon stopped at the back gate, the little girls and Mammy and the little darkies got out, and Mammy made the children say good night to Daddy Jake and Uncle Bob, and they all went into the house very tired and very sleepy and very dirty with their celebration of Mars 4th of July's birthday.